and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features. And today we have a fabulous guest who decided to come back for seconds. I don't know. We'll have to ask him why. This is his first film, people. He brought us his second film. We loved it. Now he brought us our first film, Little Pieces. Adam Nelson, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me back.
So I want to start. What possessed you to make a first feature? Like, what was it inside you? You said, okay, I made a short. Now I'm going to make a feature.
I had a slightly different route into filmmaking than other people. I didn't go to film school or anything like that. I just I studied film theoretically because all I really wanted to do was have a job where I got to talk about film. So I'd been teaching and I'd had to teach filmmaking as well as film theory. And I just kind of got bit by the bug. And I started, as I learned to use the equipment, I made little bits and pieces and found that I really enjoyed it. And then I made a short film called The House Near Apple Park, which is where the company gets its namesake from. And people liked it. It got into a couple of festivals. It didn't win anything, but the response was really good. So I was a bit older at that point. I was in my mid-20s, which to me felt old. I just kind of sat there and I thought, well, I'm a bit later to the game than everybody else. I've got this equipment to hand because I work in a filmmaking college. So I'm going to see how much money I can save between now and the next summer break. And I'm going to write something to fit that budget. And I'm going to go for it. I'm going to make a feature film and see what comes out. And that's what we did. I took some of the better students who had just graduated and went and made a feature film with them.
Okay, so you saved this money, you got it. So what were some of the issues you had on this film? I mean, I could tell some of it's editing. I mean, there's something against your editing. You have problems editing. I don't think I'm telling you anything new. I think you had a little bit of problems at the pickup at the early. I don't think you, with no talking for 8 minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah, there were lots of, there were lots of mistakes made. The best thing about Little Pieces was that it was a real big learning experience. The script had pacing issues. At that point when I was writing scripts, going back and doing a rewrite just meant going in and tidying up the dialogue and tidying up what happened. It didn't mean looking at it from a sort of overall view and thinking, do I need this? Do I need this? How can I make this better? Is this story out complete? It was just a case of, well, I'll go in and tidy it up a bit. There were issues with the script and the pacing of the script. I was working with actors who were all very kind of fresh into acting. Even one of the older ones, he was fairly new to acting. So there were not issues, but it was very challenging to me to kind of balance the different needs of them. Some of it doesn't cut together quite as well. Some of the dialogue is really overwritten. But all in all, that was all things to learn from. I think considering we only had £6,000 to make the film, we were working with a whole load of people that, despite what we believed, we really had no idea quite what we were in for. I think we did all right. We made an 80-minute film, which at the time was still a fairly kind of rare thing. Nowadays, a lot of people can go out and make a film because the technology is all there. But when we shot it, it hadn't quite exploded the way it has today. It was still quite a bold move.
So you're a second time director on this film, but I mean, a feature is obviously a little bit different than a short. It's a little less control, I would say. I mean, you need more control, but you don't really have it. So when you're trying to get all your new actors and you yourself being a new director really on a feature, how did you work those problems out? Like, what did you do?
With the actors, the main what I felt was the right thing to do was to trust them and to kind of get out of their way, and that worked in some instances. I sat down with them, we did the table read, kind of worked on, there were some things that came up in the table read that I really didn't like. One of the actors wanted to do a Glaswegian accent and it just didn't quite play well, so corrected that and said no to that. But I tried to give them a lot of opportunity to just act. And I said, you know, if things aren't quite working in the script and you need to adjust it, that's fine. You know, we can do that. We can work on that on the day. That's not a problem. Most of the cast took that how it was intended. But one did take it a bit too far and added about a third of their pre-existing dialogue to their part and then neglected to tell us. We came to set on the first day and he started talking and it was just like, I don't remember, this isn't in this, what is going on? That was a bit of an issue, especially when some of the other actors came on board and they were being confronted with things they didn't know about. So I had to really kind of work to put out fires that were being created. We had locations drop out. At the last minute, we struggled to find some locations. We turned up to one location and we hadn't thought we were being serious that we were going to shoot there. So we got there and it was essentially a building site. So they had to take an hour to tidy up before we could get in and shoot. We had to drop a scene because we'd booked out a space in one of the exteriors with the local council that said we could do it. We'd paid the invoice and someone had decided that they were going to run their yoga class and then just refused to move. And because we had so much to do in such a short amount of time, we couldn't go back and do it later. I think the fact that that scene's not in the film and the film doesn't really lose anything from it proves that actually we didn't need that anyway. And you know, that goes back to the script level. And then cutting it wasn't too bad because I did a cut and then the editor worked off of my cut to trim it down even more. We had some sound mixers lined up and because it took longer than we'd planned to cut it, they then had to go find other work. The color grader wasn't able to do the job, so because they had other work come up, and so I had to learn to color grade and do it myself, and that's why the color grade looks kind of grungy and imperfect, because I found that was sort of more suited to the tone and more the sort of look I was going to, so it doesn't look like a traditionally color graded film in that sense. So one of the challenges was kind of time. We shot it in 2013. We didn't finish it until 2015 because we just had to take so long to do stuff. We had to doing the ADR, for example. We had to arrange for people to come back to us into a studio space that we had access to. We could only do that during school holidays because there were no pupils using it at that point or no students using it at that point. So it was, a lot of it was time management as well and having to balance the time and the needs and figuring things out. Real learning experiences in those cases.
Well, that's good. I do like the color grade. I want you to say I really did like the look of the film.
Oh, thank you.
So good work on that. So now we're going to get into the film. I just wanted to go over a few things. I'm sure you wanted to get that off your chest too. Help out. So I got a question. Now, the casting, were these all students except for the security guard?
No. We did an open casting call. We were sent hundreds of CVs and showreels, and myself and producer Darren went over all of them. We gave ourselves plenty of time before the shoot to be able to do that. And then we did some auditions. We, during one of the holidays at the college, we booked out the drama theatre, and we had people come in and read for us and based it off of that. So we did a full casting process. None of them were people associated with our college. So it was the full process, and it was really quite fascinating a process, because I realised that in almost every instance, we kind of knew who I wanted as more or less as soon as they walked through the door. They just had the right thing I was looking for. The only difference there was the chap who played the security guard. He came in and read for a different part. He read for the dad part.
That's what I was thinking. I was trying to think who else he could have read for.
But he wasn't quite right for that part. So we, but the person we had an expression of interest from Philip Jackson, who's a fairly big British TV actor, for the security guard part. But he got picked up for a paid TV show, so he wasn't able to give us the time. And it just turned out that he dropped out just as Peter came in. But it was a full casting process. We cast almost all the roles from that process. It was really interesting, really like fascinating process for me.
Now, was Jerry's security guard based on anybody you have met over the years? Because he seems a very real character.
He's not any one individual person, but like he's based on facets of people, different facets of different people I know that I kind of empathize with in a way, because they've grown up having not achieved the things they wanted to achieve, and they've become kind of bitter and angry as a result of it. And that's really what I wanted to kind of portray in that character. That's what I wanted him to be. I wanted him to be someone who's angry and bitter just because he's tried for something. There's something he's wanted for so long. He's just not been able to do it. And so he's had to settle. And as a result, he's become this kind of almost monster, if you will.
Now, I want to discuss the uniforms at the factory. Did you design them, say, okay, we can only afford black pants, white shirts, so that's what everybody's getting?
Pretty much. I was in charge of everything. For the sort of exterior, for the scenes that weren't at the factory, we were largely able to get people to wear their own clothes. I brought in some elements of costume design. You know, I knew I wanted a very specific look when the Michael character was following the Jerry character across the town. I knew I wanted the Michael character to have a very specific look for that. But for a lot of it, it was people wearing their own clothes. Because we didn't have the money to put in to do really artistic design choices.
Okay, at the beginning of the film, you have your character first introduced running.
Yeah.
And running some more. And then he runs again. How many times do you have him running? Or is there more running than I saw?
Poor Finn. We had him. I think he ran pretty much everywhere you could possibly run in Guildford, the town where we shot. The whole sort of theme for that character was this kind of man, or this young man who's so fed up of his life and who he is that he's trying to run away from it. He's trying to get away from it, and he gets kind of pulled back in because of the circumstances of the film. And so the running just seemed like the easy sort of symbolism to it. And that running sequence, it bookends the film, I felt, quite nicely. We open with him running, and we get to show off some lovely parts of Guildford as we're doing that. And because I believe if we're making something in a location, I really like to show off that location, that place. And And then we see him at the end, you know, he runs to where he's going to be. And, you know, it turns out that he's turning himself over for what he's done throughout the course of the film.
Now, I do, does that lead into when he's packing bags twice? I always see him packing something into a bag. Either it's clothes or something he's taken. Is that involved with the running idea?
It's involved with the running away idea. The first time we see him packing things in the bin liner, those are the clothes that he's beaten up the security guard character yes. in. And he's trying to get rid of those. And then we come back to him packing his things. It's not necessarily very clear in the film, looking back at it. And this is where like the ability to rewrite kind of comes in, and rewrite from an outside perspective rather than just my perspective, knowing that I know everything that's going on. He's supposed to be running away from what he's done. Just, you know, I'm just going to go, because he's panicked. And then the phone call he takes is from the Cheryl character who's, you know, worked out that it's him and is trying to bring him back. And those are the scenes that I look back on it now and think, oh, I should have clarified that more. I should have put more in to make that work. But that's part of the learning experience. And
Maybe this will help you. I felt it was more of a visual storytelling than a dialogue storytelling. Is that what you were going for? Or is that just more an amateur director? I hate to use that word, but because you were so new.
I think it's a mixture of both. There's always kind of like that. You're told show, don't tell when you're learning to make films. And that films should be about people doing things. So a lot of it kind of came from that. But also, I think of all the things that I do when I write and come up with stories myself, I think dialogue is my weakest element. So I do try and skip over it if I can try and do something visually. And that was very much the case here. I've gotten better at it since writing the script for Little Pieces. And I now... Now I like to do sort of table reads and read-throughs before I've even finished the script so I can hear people saying the words. Or I'll sit and I'll read it out loud so I can hear how the words sound. Such I've developed sort of techniques to make that process a lot easier. But at the time, I was just like, oh, I can't write dialogue, so I'm just going to have them speak as little as possible. And sometimes that really, really works. And other times... it leads to those long periods of silence where it kind of feels like nothing's happening.
But I would think you use your lack of dialogue writing in your second film I saw, the first film I saw of yours, immensely well. So I would say you learned everything off this film that I've seen you took to your second film and amplified it. Would you say that's possible?
Definitely. Someone else wrote the screenplay for the first film you saw. And part of the reason I was attracted to that screenplay was because there was so little dialogue in it. It was a very showy film.
My argument is you as a director need to do something with it. I can write whatever you want. I can write, I went to the store. But you as a director decide how I got to that store.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason I was attracted to that script was because it was very dialogue sparse. As well as the sort of science fiction themes and the science fiction elements to it. But I think definitely learning from what people said about Little Pieces and the way the sort of the silences did or didn't work definitely lent itself to how I presented the lack of dialogue in Emu, without a doubt. Especially like everybody talks about the ice rink sequence in Little Pieces and
I was getting there
and, you know, how that works as a sequence without dialogue or with very little dialogue. And so I took that and how that worked for us and brought that across definitely.
Okay. Since you brought my ice rink sequence, which I was getting to later, but we can go there. I found you changed a lot as a writer from the beginning of the film to the ice rink sequence. I definitely felt you were a stronger writer at the ice rink sequence. I felt you had more direction. I don't mean to be rude to you, but I really felt you knew what you wanted in the ice rink scene, and I don't feel you knew what you wanted in the opening scene.
Yeah, there's definitely elements of that to it. The ice rink scene was just, it was like a perfect storm of elements, because the idea was she could skate, he couldn't skate. And when Izzy came in to read for us, I already knew that I really liked her. And I said to her, by the way, in the script, there is a sequence where your character goes to an ice rink with another character, and the idea is you can skate and he can't skate. I said, can you ice skate? And she said, yeah, I'm going in a minute, because the ice skating rink in Guildford was literally across the road from the college. She was like, yeah, I'm going in a minute, because I've come here to do this. And I thought I might as well go. And she was a really, really good ice skater. So everything in that sequence where he can't skate is absolutely authentic. She was teaching him as they went. It's real. It's absolutely real.
You took away my next question, because that was on my list. Because he doesn't look like he can skate at all.
He got out on the ice, and within 5 minutes, he slipped, left the ground, spun in the air, and landed really hard on the ice. Got up, came off, and I had to take him to one side because he was refusing to go back on. And I had to say to him, I have paid a lot of money for us to be able to do this after it's closed. I need you on that ice. Get on with it. Even when it came to the bit where they're putting their boots on and she's teaching him how to walk, all of that, I didn't actually write any of that dialogue. That was just then her showing him how to walk, and we just put the camera there and let it happen. And because of her personality and his personality, it just happened. And the people at the ice rink were absolutely fantastic. They were really helpful. At first, they let us lay out a bit of carpet that went out into the center of the ice rink so that we could sit in the middle and kind of follow them around. And it wasn't working. There wasn't enough energy in the shots. And the guy who was there to supervise us said, I can get the cleaner out and we can sit your camera operator on the back of it, and I'll drive around and follow them, and he can film from the back of the... And like, that's how that scene creates that kind of sense of movement and feel, because we were on the ice with them, on the ice cleaner. And it works so well. I've made better films than Little Pieces, but I still don't think I've directed a better scene than that ice rinking scene.
Okay. I will challenge you with a sense when your character in the science fiction film is staring at the mirror with the book in front of him. And it's fabulous. I love the color. It's the colors on that. It's black. I would argue your other film has some great static shots. I don't really like static shots, but in your second film, you have some great shots. Don't knock your second film at all.
Oh, no. I love Emotional Motor Unit. I think it's a much better film overall. There's something special to me about that ice rink scene. I think it's because we almost didn't get it. We almost didn't have it. They asked us for a lot of money, and we had to debate whether or not we wanted to do it. And I agreed to, and I was just like, all right, we'll figure something out. I'll borrow some money or something because I really want this scene. And when I rang them back up, the guy who'd quoted us a really high price said, we only quote a really high price first time round because we want to know that people are serious, that they're not just going to turn up and waste our time. We'll do it for this. But it came so close to us almost not getting it. And I just think that because we almost lost it, I love that. It's just one of my favorite things I've ever done. I had such a wonderful experience doing it.
I'm going to get in trouble here, but it's your best scene in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're filming at an ice rink, do people in England give you a weird look? Like, are there that many ice rinks? I don't know. I mean, I live in Canada. There's an ice rink everywhere.
There's more than you'd probably assume. Okay. It's not as common as it would be in Canada, but like there is one in Guildford. There's one not too far away from me, actually. It's about a half hour drive away from me, from where I live. At Christmas, in the city where I live, they build an ice rink in our sort of Guildhall Square, where all our civic offices and all that are. They build an ice rink just for the sort of Christmas period. So ice skating is somewhat popular here. We were really lucky. They let us film after hours, so it was empty and we didn't have to worry about other people and such.
Well, if you ever make it to Canada, just come in the winter. Everybody has one in their backyard. And that's not a joke. There's tons of them. Let's go back. You have lots of locations for a first-time director. I started writing them down. I'm like, was this your plan to have this many multiple locations? Usually first-time directors don't go to this degree, I thought.
Yeah, I wanted it to be as locationally interesting as possible. In part because I didn't want to give away the sort of central conceit of the film about the relationship between the two separate stories. And so I wanted to have like very distinct sets of locations for both of those sets of characters. And then they're only kind of linked because of the security guard character and how things were left here. But we were very lucky in that we managed to get a lot of locations in kind of one place. And so a lot of the factory locations were filmed in the college we worked at. We went over to their construction department, which looked like a factory setting for the exteriors. And that was really great. And there's lots of interesting sort of lines and buildings there. The sort of break rooms and places like that, we went inside to the actual staff, one of the staff break rooms that we had at that college. For the cafe restaurant like sequence, we went over to the catering department's cafe and restaurants. The college were really, really supportive, because like for them to be able to say that they're one of their lead media teachers is shooting a feature film was a big selling point to parents and getting parents to sign off on sending their kids in. So the college were really supportive. All of the sort of park locations took place in the park that the college backed on to. The ice rink was just across the road. The house that the father and son live in, we rented that, and it was just down the road from the college. It was within walking distance. They were great. I'm trying to think of some of the other locations we went to. And we moved around the city, the town of Guildford, and just sort of plotted a route for the following scene. We went down by the river and then followed him up to the park. It's a massive park, so it's got quite a lot of variety of different locations within that park setting. And then for the sequences where he was running, we plotted sort of like a loop around the town so we could start and just looping around, and then we went out by the cathedral, which is a really lovely place. It sits on top of a hill in Guildford. Also appeared in the very first Omen film, that cathedral.
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
So, yeah, same place. So, like, just new, because it's such a representation of Guildford. Like, it sits on a hill, and as you drive past Guildford, you can see it. So I knew I wanted him to run across the front of that. But yeah, I wanted it to be, we went across to the university and shot in some of their halls of residence. And they were really great. They let us do that for free. So yeah, I just wanted it to be visually interesting. I wanted it to not feel like it was a film about people stuck in rooms, like so many first time kind of films are. Because I knew I'd have to write a lot of dialogue if I was doing that, and I think that kind of intimidated me. And the irony is that the film I've just made that I've got in post now is a film about people sat in rooms with loads of dialogues.
I'm shocked that from you. I really am watching your first two films. Now, you do give the Sharon character a ton of dialogue. She doesn't stop talking. She seems to have a lot to say to everybody.
Yeah. She was kind of... I think that character is the sort of the super character that everybody else almost projects onto. You know, I use her to understand how a lot of the other characters feel, particularly the security guard and the Michael character. She was my favourite character in the film as well. She was a late addition to the film. I wrote a very early draft of the script, and I showed it to a friend, and he said to me, "You do realise this is an all-male script." And it's really kind of, he said, it's a bit off. Like, I think it would benefit from a female voice. So I went back and I changed a character. So it was a similar character role, but it was originally a man, and I changed it to a woman, and it opened it up. It allowed it to be a much more intimate relationship between her and the Michael character. And that really worked. And because Izzy, who plays her, was such a kind of warm character, she just brings everything out of people. She is by and far like my favourite kind of part of the film, from script level all the way through, I think.
Mine too. But my question is, we don't have Sharon. How do we have the ice rink scene? Or that wasn't there in the first draft?
Wasn't there in the first draft, no. Okay.
I was trying to figure out how that one worked. I'm like, okay, maybe we're going for a gay film, which is fine by me. I would have watched it, but I'm just like, okay. You do have a lot of violence and high tension. I find your films always ramping. Keeps going. Was that planned? Like, even with the visual storytelling, I did feel tension at times.
Yeah, it's in many ways, it is a film about violence. As a younger, when I was younger, I kind of sort of used to bottle things up a lot. I didn't know how to let things out. And as I got older, I came to understand why. When I was younger, I didn't really understand. I didn't really let things out. I'd let them bottle up, and then they'd just kind of come out in like explosions of not necessarily violent actions, but violent words, and I could be quite horrible to people. I could be quite unpleasant to be around. And I kind of wanted to explore that idea about how things kind of bubble up to a certain point, and then it has to release. And it releases through violence. I thought releasing it through violence is a far more, what's the word I'm thinking of? It's a far more visceral experience than if it's people talking in anger. You know, you've got the sequence with the only sequences that take place in order. It's the scene where the Jerry and Cheryl character are in the break room talking, and he loses his temper, because she represents to him everything that he's probably never going to be but wanted to be. And so that boils over. And then he goes down into the warehouse and beats up the young lad. And those are the only two sequences that happen in chronological order, because I felt it was just absolutely important that that happened in order, so that we fully understand that one is a result of the other. If we hadn't had that sequence, if they hadn't had that conversation, he wouldn't have been that angry, and he wouldn't have felt like he had to prove himself to her by beating this young lad up. We had a really interesting conversation, Peter and I, about his character and whether or not he might actually secretly fancy her and be attracted to her, but not in a kind of but not wanting to show it in a lecherous way. We kind of pulled it right back. But we did have that interesting conversation about whether this macho kind of like, look at me, I can provide everything you need. Not this boyfriend that you've just talked about and such. But yeah, it is. I think it is in many ways a film of violence and how it can just come exploding out of you if you allow it to bubble up, if you allow things to bubble up too long and don't release them in healthy ways, which is another reason why I wanted to show the Michael character running a lot, because exercise always helps me get my frustrations and anger out. For me, it's you know, that was part of it for me. Like, that's why he was the one that exercises, whereas the other character, Eric, doesn't exercise. You know, he doesn't do anything. He just constantly, like, he's blowing up all the time because he has no outlet, because the only person he can talk to is his dad, who he hates.
Okay, it's your first movie, and you have good music. So who'd you get to do music for the Jeep?
I work with a composer called Imran. His name is Imran Hussein. And he was a student of mine. And I invited him to do the score. He was one of the... Usually when you have student films, at the level that we were making student films at, they like rip things off of YouTube or off of SoundCloud and just put them into their films. And what we had from him was he would go away and compose for the films he was working on. So they would have completely fresh stuff. And he is incredibly talented. And so I invited him to do the score, and actually he wound up being a lot more involved. He did a lot of sound recording for us as well. And I've worked with him ever since.
That's great.
He did the music for EMU, and he's doing the music for the film that I've got in post now. The only time we haven't worked together was when I made a little piece for an anthology film that came out last year, year before, I think. He wasn't available to work on that, and I actually opted not to have music in it. The editor composed a little bit of music for a scene he thought needed music adding to it, but I actually opted not to work with the composer for it. I was just kind of like, oh, it's only like 8 minutes long, it's fine, we'll get away with not having music, it's not a problem. But he's come back to do the film I've got in post now, and he's absolutely excelling himself.
So before I let you go, two questions this time. Your favorite film from last year?
I really liked Titane. Thought that was really summing. Really enjoyed that. And I also really enjoyed a film called Beyond with Riz Ahmed, where he plays a former Marine. Was it Beyond?
Yeah, it's got a different name here. We call it Encounter here.
Yes, it is Encounter. It's not Beyond. Beyond is
something. Oh, okay, because I'm like, I know when you said Race of Mad thing, I'm like, it's called Encounter.
No, it was Encounter, yes. I liked it so much, I forgot the title. but no, I really loved that as well. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
There is no talking that film. No wonder you like it. It is so surreal visual storytelling. Sit, wait, a little bit of chat, something happens. Sit, wait. It's totally your kind of film. I totally get it. Your second question. Can you name or tell me an underrated film that people should see besides your own?
I really like St. Maud. That's particularly popular over there, over where you are. It's a British horror film about a young woman who speaks to God. I really love it. It was my favourite film of the year before. I think more people should see it. I think Rose Glass is a fantastic director. I think Martha Clark is an incredible actor. That film, it shook me. It really shook me. The ending shook me, and I kind of walked to the car in a daze after coming out of the screening for it. because I wasn't quite sure how to take what I'd seen, but I absolutely love it. I love it so much that I bought the collector's edition Blu-ray of it with the beautiful artwork that comes in a steel case. I loved it that much. I actually paid more than I usually would for it.
Well, then you must like it. Before we let you go, please tell everybody where they can find all your wonderful projects.
So, Little Pieces and Emu are on Amazon Prime. They're not available to stream, unfortunately. They're only available to purchase. They were available to stream, but purchase or rent. They were available to stream, but Amazon have had a kind of moment recently where they only stream stuff now that comes through an official distributor, but people can buy it or they can rent it. Something that is streaming on there that I worked on is the anthology I just mentioned called I Am an Addict. Eclectic mix of little horror films. I like my film that's in it, and I like some of the others as well. It's worth sticking with because it's definitely got some interesting ideas in that. That is available to stream on Prime, I believe, or, again, people can rent it or purchase it.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Likewise. Thank you very much.